Well, a lot of the things that should have been done, it's almost too late to do. And so I've got to back, I mean, I've got to go back further to answer that question, because there were so many missed opportunities that that's the central issue as to why we need a new attorney general badly, at least with regard to this, the particular CoinGate scandal and then some of the collateral scandals that have come out. The first major guidepost for Attorney General Petro should have been when he gets a warning letter from the Securities and Exchange Commission, the federal agency responsible for protecting individual investors. And the letter says that they've been trying to talk to the Bureau of Workers' Comp and they're not getting anywhere. They're trying to warn them that politically connected brokers are being paid way excessive fees above the market. In other words, they're trying to say, dear Mr. Petro, general counsel of the trillion-dollar corporation called the state of Ohio, your state is being ripped off. We've tried to tell your clients, they won't listen. Now we're writing you. And that's the gist of it. So what does he do? His entire internal investigation consists of having his senior, his chief counsel, I think is the title, the number two person in his office, call over to the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, ask him, do you think you have a problem? The answer is no. Okay, write it up for us. So they write it up, and he virtually copies and pastes their writing onto his own letterhead and tells the SEC to pound salt. Now, any general counsel of any other trillion-dollar corporation in America would have been fired for that performance. Jim Petro apparently feels it entitles him to run for governor and seek the president and CEO's position now that the president and CEO is retiring. That's how surreal the world of politics is. You know, bad performance still lets people feel a sense of entitlement just because they're known. And he should be known at this point as a scoundrel. So he failed to act at that point. What should have been done is a thorough internal investigation. This was one of the things that motivated me to run, was when I was reading these quotes from Petro or his spokespeople saying, well, he couldn't investigate the Bureau of Workers' Compensation because they were his clients. That is false. Because anybody who paid attention in law school will tell you that the lawyer for an entity represents the entity, not the individuals in their individual capacity who are the officers of that entity. So, for example, Ken Lay's lawyers, you know, the general counsel of Enron, could not turn to and say, well, Ken Lay made me do it. You can't get away with it. You have a fiduciary obligation to the corporation, to the shareholders. And so if Ken Lay is doing something wrong, you have a fiduciary obligation to deal with it and correct it and investigate it and so forth. So this happened to me many times when I was Cleveland Law Director, where there would be allegations of impropriety against city officials who we might be representing in some other matter, but we're only representing them in their official capacity. If they're doing something wrong, it's totally appropriate, and in fact, it is required that we investigate those allegations, and we did many, many times. So he just went way off track here, and what he should have done was really make sure that he investigated this whole thing properly, and if necessary, hire outside attorneys, although that shouldn't have been necessary because he personally should have the skills and he should have a staff that has the skills to be able to do this. And you know, again, this is a matter of some complexity, so I'd cut him some slack if he gave it to outside counsel. So that's step one, okay? Then there were other things that were missteps. You had the contract with one of the companies that ripped off workers' comp, MDL. $215 million of money intended for Ohio's injured workers gone. You know where the contract said that we're supposed to pursue our money? Litigate that dispute? Bermuda. Because that's what the contract said. And why did the contract say it? Because the general counsel of our trillion-dollar corporation failed to advise clients and instruct his lawyers to advise clients that when you enter into contracts, make sure the contract says that Ohio is where disputes will be resolved and it will be in front of an Ohio judge in an Ohio courtroom. I mean, this is bordering on malpractice, if not over that line. Very significant stuff. And yet, You know, again, he continues to feel entitled to run for governor. And let's face it, here's why. It's because he never wanted to be attorney general to begin with. It was just a way station for that fantasy of being governor. Why they want to be governor, I don't know. It's not like they want to ever do anything with the job. But they all picture themselves in that chair. Now, I have been receiving, since I started going around the state and traveling and talking about these issues, I started getting calls from assistant attorneys general, who are there now, sometimes emails from their private accounts, sometimes a private visit after a speech, and I'll get approached and they'll say, "You have no idea how bad it is. This office has been hijacked completely by people who are simply using it for political ambition. Everything, every decision is politicized." And they say, and this was where it got strange, they say, "You have no idea how many bodies are buried that we've got in the office." What do you mean? The first person said this to me, I thought, okay, this is a disgruntled employee. But then after the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th person said this to me, I began to wonder what was going on. And one person said, "Look, the information that we have is arguably privileged. You need to hurry up and get elected so we can share it with you and we can act on it." What this leads me to believe is that similar to the Bureau of Workers' Comp scandal, there are other large pots of money and giveaways of taxpayer money that need to be vigorously pursued. And I can only guess at what some of them are. Charter school seems to be a huge example, where $500 million of state money has been taken out of the public educational system and given to people who haven't had to account for how they spent it. Similarly with the School Facilities Commission, the way that they have insisted that there be no prevailing wage payments. So there's a whole bunch of examples like this, and all of these things underlie my motivation for doing this. Returning back to your original question, what I would be doing differently is a completely different approach from the outset. So we wouldn't even be in the mess now where Petro would be pursuing all these civil lawsuits and, you know, to kind of show that he's being tough on it, even when the federal and state task force that's handling the criminal aspect of the case asked him not to do those things. Because they said, "Look, this is grandstanding, and you're going to interfere with the criminal case." And any prosecutor worth their salt knows the criminal case comes first. You know, and then you try to suspend this. If you bring the civil case to stop the clock on the statute of limitations, you then suspend it and say, "Let's leave this in abeyance until the criminal case is going forward." Jim Petro has refused to do that, last I heard. And he's just doing it so he can get in the headlines and look like a guy who's cleaning it up, who's a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. And he is a part of the problem.
One thing that makes me really nervous and listen when you talk about this stuff is that the solution that Democrats offer to every problem is elect us,
right?
And that's not an acceptable solution in a system. I mean, I mean, in a business, it's not just because one manager is managing that you get to balance the books and make sure that your accounts are credible. And the fact that there are dozens of these different situations waiting to be discovered, what can we do to help things if you lose?
Where was the legislature, you know, in all of this? Where were the Democrats in the legislature while all this stuff was going on? You asked a completely different question than where I thought you were going. I mean, what? Say that again.
I need a system where even though, I mean, I'm so far to the left, and I'm such a wacky liberal, that I'm never going to get anything that I ever want. I know this, which is why I use the bully pulpit of digital media to try to warp bizarre, you know, push things in weird, or change the landscape any way I can, just for fun. And, you know, it gives you a certain amount of pleasure. But I need...
God, Chris, the Warren County Democratic Party offered you water. What more do you
I mean, I need to be able to monitor and call people to account for their actions, even if I'm not in power. Right now, my only tool is humiliation, public humiliation. What can we do so that even if Democrats lose, we can still get accountable for this stuff?
Here, let me step back from that question, and I'll come back to it, because I think, again, you identified all these issues that you were dead on about how all this stuff is out there. But the thing you started with was, you know, the Democrats say, "Elect us and all will be well," right? If I may offer a contrarian thought, this isn't a partisan scandal. It is a partisan scandal only in the sense that the current people holding office who've been trading jobs back and forth for the last decade and a half happen to be Republicans. But there is nothing genetic about being a Republican that leads one to engage in this kind of behavior and malfeasance and, you know, not doing your job or any of that other stuff. This is a systemic problem. This is a systemic problem, and just because somebody has a D after their name doesn't mean that they're either capable of solving it or they're going to solve it. Now, having said that, you can be assured that the current crop of office holders, if, you know, recycled, aren't going to do it. And I, as a Democrat, I am a strong believer in recycling. But there are some substances that are too worn out and too toxic to be recycled, and Betty Montgomery is one of them.
Oh, duh.
So what we have to do somehow is actually offer people a positive alternative vision for what the offices can be. And you, I mean, you've talked about this consistently on your blog. And that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, we can talk about CoinGate, and I just did, as a spark for why I entered this race. But I'm going to come off sounding like a Johnny One Note, and I know at least one person who does, by talking about nothing but this. Because people don't care after a certain point. They're already cynical about what their government can do for them and whether it will. So by simply talking about the problem and not offering solutions, we offer nothing. And it's not just solution to the particular problem, because that's a classic legislative mentality, right? Oh, look, we see this little problem. Let's fix it with something that feels good and sounds good at the time, but might have unintended consequences and might not get at the root causes. I mean, we see that. We've seen that since 1974 with the post-Watergate reforms. So instead, we have to kind of take a 20,000-foot view of this and say, what is actually happening to Ohio? What is happening to our government that's doing this? You know what the underlying cause of all this is? The system of funding campaigns. And the solution to that is not, oh my goodness, you know, let's then reduce the individual contribution limit from 10,000 to 5,000, or 10,000 to 1,000, problem solved. Or if you're going to have a contract, reduce the contractual limit for donors from 1,000 to 250. You know, there's a limit. If you give beyond 1,000, you're not eligible for unbid contracts. Even though the individual contribution limit is otherwise 10,000. That's a classic legislator's response. The underlying problem, that solution seems to suggest, well, a little bit of corruption is okay, but a lot is not okay. And we're just trying to, like Goldilocks in search of the right, you know, softness of bed, we're just trying to find the right amount of corruption in the bed. The reality is that the issue here is private financing of campaigns. That as soon as you permit who gets to run for office, who gets to win office, and who gets to preserve office and seek the next office to be determined by how much money they can raise from people who have a pecuniary interest in those offices, as soon as you do that, then you have a corrupt system, period.
Right.
So public financing, or what's called clean elections, is really ultimately the only solution to this, as they have in Arizona, as they have in New Jersey, because what you then do is say, if you want to run for office, show a certain amount of threshold support by gathering, say, a bunch of $5 contributions, and that makes you eligible for the ballot, that makes you eligible for public financing, and then you can get your message out. The people who object to that say, well, I don't want my public money, my tax money, being used to finance campaigns. And actually, in some of those states, they use a surcharge on lawsuits to finance it. But my question is simply this. What the hell do you think you have now? You got Jim Petro spending $120 million on outside lawyers over the course of 3 years, and I've studied the spending, and a huge percentage of it can be cut and was unnecessary, and he's farming out work that could have been done in-house. And what happens? He takes a legalized kickback in the form of a campaign contribution and becomes the best-funded candidate for governor. And we wonder why people are cynical about politics.
Well, okay, now you're getting into an area which I kind of short-circuit, which is when people start there's certain types of arguments that people make which are totally 100% true, but to me are irrelevant. One of them is changing the Electoral College system. Right. Yes, the Electoral College system sucks, and if
right.
we could change it, we're stuck with it.
Right.
So anybody who wants to debate to me about public campaign financing, create a system to get the thing on the ballot, make it happen. Otherwise...
No, Chris, that's fair. That's fair.
You know.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, I'm talking about a solution that's maybe 5 years out if we see it.
Right.
Well. But what I'm saying is that then your next fallback, because you're right, let's go to the next. Now the issue is, within the system you've got, what kind of people are you electing? What kind of people are you pushing forward? And the political class replicates itself, right? So we look at an office of attorney general, and there seem to be a good chunk of people in this party, the Democratic Party, who seem to believe that a politician who happens to have a law degree is sufficiently qualified to be the general counsel of a trillion-dollar corporation called the state of Ohio that has complex legal issues from intellectual property to real estate transactions, really complicated litigation in federal courts around the country, maybe international litigation as a result of the Snowy scandal and the Bermuda litigation we may have to pursue. This is a very, very complicated legal job, and you need to be able to hire first-rate lawyers, attract first-rate lawyers to do it, and to do it well, and to do it where it's not just the bare minimum, which is what they're doing now, just defend the state when it's sued, as opposed to take on some of the major battles for this state, the seventh biggest state in the country. So here what you have is a situation in which we've gotten to a point where we're too willing to compromise on the quality of candidates and on the kind of people that should be seeking these offices. It is amazing to me that some of the candidates who run for some of these offices sometimes are taken seriously. But they are, because they're qualified insofar as you look at holding office previously as being qualified. So one of the things that we have to do, so there's the issue of qualification. Then there's just the issue of integrity. And, you know, integrity can be defined very broadly or very loosely, and it can also be defined pretty narrowly. But the reality is that integrity should matter when you're looking at the kind of people you're putting forward for public office. I think at this point, we've pretty much convincingly demonstrated that the individual people who are all trying to trade jobs now on the Republican side lack integrity. And that is not to suggest that they're criminals, and at least one might be. That's not to suggest they might be criminals, but what I mean is, by integrity, I'm saying, when confronted with a certain set of facts and a policy choice, do they make the right choice? When Ken Blackwell was Secretary of State, or you know he is now, in 2004, the moment he decided to publicly announce that he was going to write the boards of elections and tell them that they must only honor voter registration forms, even printed from his website, if they are on the right cardstock, you knew the man lacked integrity. You know, it was either integrity, common sense, intelligence, whatever it was, there was something sufficiently deficient that he had no business being in public office. But there he is.